This is Northwest Reports. I'm Malia Sayed. Today, we're reflecting on the legacy of former Washington Governor Dan Evans. Evans served as governor from 1965 to 1977, making him one of only a few in the state's history to be elected three times. He's held plenty of other roles too, like U.S. Senator and chairman of the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. In this episode, we first speak with Associate News Editor Venice Buhayan, who recently attended an event by the Northwest Power and Conservation Council that featured Evans, about the former governor's influence in shaping Washington as we know it today. Then we chat with editor-at-large and Washington native Knute Berger, who you might know as Mossback, about what it was like to grow up with Evans as governor and watch his legacy evolve over the decades. So, Venice, you are currently a news editor, but you have been a reporter in Washington for years. Could you tell me about your understanding of who Dan Evans is? Just, you know, as a reporter, as a resident, what do you know about him?
Well, mostly I am familiar with him as a resident. I know there's a lot of stuff in the state named after Daniel J. Evans. There's the public policy school at the UW. A big part of the Olympic National Park is named after Daniel J. Evans. That happened a few years ago, 2017 or somewhere about there. And, you know, he's 98. He was a three-term governor, and he kind of came in. So he was elected the same year as Lyndon B. Johnson was elected, and Dan Evans ousted an incumbent Democratic governor in Washington State. And so that kind of speaks to, well, his campaign skills and kind of the you know, he was well-known for being a bipartisan state legislator. Yeah, and throughout his political career, that was one of the things he was known for, was being bipartisan and, you know, working with any legislator that would kind of help get things for Washington State. I know that he was very welcoming to Vietnamese refugees in the 1970s.
I was furious. Here were people who were being driven from their home country, had no place to go, and we were trying to reject them. It didn't make sense.
He was a U.S. senator in the 80s. He was appointed by Washington's last Republican governor, John Spellman. He was appointed to the Senate after Washington's Senator Henry Jackson died in 1983. He also sat on the Indian Affairs Committee, you know, at a time where they kind of passed the Indian Gaming Act, and also they were pushing for tribal governance. You know, the Evergreen State College got started while he was governor, and then he later served as its president. You know, he served on the UW Board of Regents. He wrote his autobiography a couple years ago. Yeah, he's 98 and still
doing stuff.
Still very, very active.
Recently, you went to an event in Olympia at Evergreen State College, and it was put on by the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. So, like you said, Evans was both president of the college at one point. He also was the first chair of this council in the early 80s. Can you just give a quick overview? What does this council do and what its mission is?
It's a four-state compact between Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. It was created in 1980. You know, so the four states can make decisions kind of jointly on issues surrounding energy and wildlife conservation.
And when I was looking into Evans and his legacy, I just didn't realize, maybe because I'm new to Washington, I've only been here a few years, just how involved he was with conservation efforts and preserving the environment and really backing a lot of efforts to preserve Washington's natural lands. How much would you say that you knew about his conservation efforts?
You know, I did not know very much. I know that the Northwest Power and Conservation Council brought him out to kind of highlight his history and his commitment in that area.
He had the courage to stand up to the base of his own party or the extremist elements within it. He stared him down and he won as a consequence of his courage. He is, in fact, the gold standard. He is, in fact, one of a kind leader. And how grateful every one of us ought to be that we were the ones gifted with him.
He did push for legislation when he was in the U.S. Senate that Ronald Reagan signed that preserved like 1 million acres of wildland in Washington State as part of the national park system, which I imagine could not have been easy in the 1980s, and with a Republican president in place, or with Ronald Reagan in place. And so, like, according to accounts from the time, he was one of the ones who led the congressional delegation, like, which was a little bit more bipartisan than it is now, to unite together and push for this legislation for Washington State. So I didn't know, I knew that that was something that happened in the 80s, and I guess I've learned how much he had to do with that and how much people give Dan Evans credit for that.
Yeah, and you had touched on some of the other ways that he sort of maybe broke the mold a little bit. For example, in terms of higher education reform, in terms of letting refugees from Vietnam settle in Washington. We're talking about the environment. He also pushed for reproductive rights. And I guess I would just be curious, do you think at that time it was revolutionary in breaking the mold, or does it seem like Washington politics in general were kind of headed that way anyway?
Politics at the time when Dan Evans was governor, right? Let's not pretend it wasn't partisan and it wasn't polarized, because it was 1964, right? Right in the middle of the civil rights movement.
I'm about to sign into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
And things like, you know, affirmative action were just taking shape, right? And the Vietnam War was happening at the same time. It was definitely a politically fraught time. So, you know, I think one of the things that I guess makes Dan Evans such a lion and a giant in Washington state politics was that he was able to navigate all that and create bipartisan policies and to find compromise. I mean, that's kind of like what people talk about today when they talk about Dan Evans's legacy. Some of the things, like last night, people had an opportunity to sort of lionize him and to sing his praises about certain things. Like Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck had brought up that Dan Evans was in the Senate when the Indian Gaming Act was passed.
There would be no National Indian Gaming Regulatory Act without United States Senator Dan Evans, period. That 1988 law, lest any of you do not know this or underestimate it, was literally responsible for the fastest, biggest reduction in poverty of any demographic group in the history of the United States of America. Countless lives, hundreds of thousands of lives, were lifted up by the bill that would not have become law were it not for Dan Evans.
I guess that's like it's interesting just to kind of think about like all of the things that we might take for granted in the 2020s that like actually that he touched on. So, you know, I went to that event last night and it was very much like a lionization of Dan Evans. So he got a present from, I believe it was the council gave him a blanket, and then also the Evergreen State College gave him a blanket.
But this is our 25th anniversary blanket. And the name of it is Honoring Friendships. We think that Honoring Friendships is a perfect name for a blanket for being our friend. And you were here when we opened our doors. And so we're happy to present you with this.
I mean, you know, basically it was an opportunity for people to, you know, say thank you to this man who's 98 and to sing his praises and also just ask him a couple questions about what it was like to be on the council and his advice for them. And there was like a little cute little photo opportunity at the end to have your photo taken and Dan Evans.
Did you get one?
I did not. So
that was Associate News Editor Venice Buhayan. Now, here's a conversation we had with Knut Berger about Dan Evans and his legacy. So, you grew up here in Washington. What did you know about Dan Evans growing up? Like, when did he first show up on your radar?
Well, he first showed up on my radar in 1964 when I was 10 years old and I collected campaign buttons.
Now, I will be a candidate for the governor of the state of Washington.
And I still have some Dan Evans for governor buttons from 1964. And that was the election that he won. He beat the Democratic incumbent, Al Rosalini. And there was a rather, I won't quote it, but there was a rather rude schoolyard rhyme about Rosalini. And then, of course, he was elected governor. And my parents were, I guess what you would call, they were sort of Rockefeller Republicans or Ripon Society Republicans, basically progressive Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, people have forgotten that the Republican Party at the turn of the 20th century was a progressive party. That was a party of Teddy Roosevelt. And many of those progressive impulses and policies were still alive here in the Pacific Northwest in a branch of the Republican Party in Washington and Oregon particularly.
What do you remember about Dan Evans as governor? I know he had three terms, so there's a lot of years to cover, but just anything that sticks out?
Well, I think what sticks out is he was a straight arrow who was very likable. You know, he was a family man. He was an outdoor guy. He was local. He was from Washington. And of course, he was an Eagle Scout. But he was also an engineer and had this kind of calm and practical orientation. You know, he wasn't a conservative Republican who hated government. He was somebody who just thought, well, I can make government better. And so I think the thing I remember and most people remember is that he was very green for a Republican, particularly at that time. It was during those years that the Department of Ecology was created, and it was a very significant organization. A lot of states, didn't have a Department of Ecology.
Right.
He lobbied hard for wilderness preservation. So I think it was the kind of a mainstream Republican with this very green tinge.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering, because Washington, in my mind, would have historically just been such a green state. But was he kind of the one who pioneered that dedication to preserving the environment and dedication to conservation here?
Well, I don't think he pioneered it, but he was on board early. I mean, he was an avid outdoors person, an avid backpacker. He still loves the wilderness and hiking. And there was a joining of Democrats and Republicans on that issue. So we had two fairly green Democratic senators, Scoop Jackson and Warren G. Magnuson, and they were very powerful in the democratically controlled Senate at that time. They had a lot of seniority. And so a lot of environmental legislation ran through those two. And then you had a Republican governor who wasn't setting up roadblocks to that. He was on board. You know, we're going to create the North Cascades National Park. I'm on board with that. We're going to expand the Olympic Wilderness Area, the Olympic National Park. I'm on board with that. So that created a coalition that was enormously powerful at the federal and the state level.
My understanding of Dan Evans was he was really open to collaborating with people across the aisle. Was he generally well-liked as a governor? Was there any opposition to him that you remember growing up?
Well, there certainly was opposition to him. I mean, he always had opponents when he ran, for re-election. But, you know, he managed to, you know, and I'm not sure if this is still possible, but in his era, if you had independent voters, progressive Republicans and Democrats on your side, or Democrats who were sympathetic to a middle of the road kind of approach, you were hard to beat. So I think he appealed to traditional Republicans. I think he did well in general, being reelected and having a broad appeal. And you can see today, you know, Republicans in looking to replace, say, Jay Inslee, they're looking at, well, can we, you know, do we have a candidate who will get Republican votes but can also get the middle of the road voter or the some Democrats who will vote for a Republican if they're green enough?
And you've talked about this a little bit, but he was essentially a progressive Republican. At that time, what did that mean? What were progressive Republicans kind of pushing for? And was his approach to his party still pushing boundaries? For example, he was an advocate for the environment, an advocate for reproductive rights. Were the actions that he was taking pushing boundaries, or was that sort of aligning with where progressive Republicans were at the time?
I think it was leading among Republicans, and it was where the mainstream voters of Washington were at that time. There wasn't the kind of polarization that you see now. There wasn't the East-West divide was not as intense as it has, you know, subsequently become. You know, Washington voters were pro-choice. Washington voters were very friendly to environmental initiatives in general. And, you know, I don't think he saw taking care of the environment as anti-business. That was a lot of the criticism of environmentalism was you're going to hurt the logging industry or you're going to shut down development. And this was going on in Oregon as well. And the progressive Republicans in both Washington and Oregon, in Oregon you had Governor Tom McCall, a real conservationist. Mark Hatfield, senator, who fit in this kind of category, they really were pushing back in terms of saying we have to develop things smarter, we have to have limits, we have to protect these resources.
And you went on a hike with him a few years ago. What was that about? Why did you go?
Well, I have written about, there is a group called the Mainstream Republicans, and they have an annual conference up in Leavenworth. And I've been there a couple of times. And these are people who are sort of the Evans Republican mold. Some are a little more conservative, more kind of Reagan Republicans. But, you know, they're not MAGA types. And they get together and talk about policies and candidates who they should support that reflect that. So, you know, at the time Dan Evans was governor, it's important to remember that most of the offices at the state level were held by similarly liberal Republicans, or Republicans who are less conservative than what you might think. Slade Gorton as Attorney General, of course, he's got a very long and controversial career, but he was a bit of a zig when people zagged kind of guy. We had Lud Cramer was Secretary of State, Ralph Monroe, who was the guy who Evans sent down to California to invite the Vietnamese refugees to come to Washington. You know, he had a cabinet of aides and whatnot who were kind of in that same space. And so it was a winning, for a while, it was a winning strategy statewide.
Before I ask you about his legacy, I want to ask about you watching him rappel down the clock tower.
Oh.
Could you talk about that? When was that?
Sure. Well, I think it was 1974, if I'm remembering correctly. It was in that time period. I was working on the college newspaper, and we had an office that actually kind of looked out on the plaza there and the watchtower or the clock tower. So I was very cynical about it. And, you know, somebody was, you know, talking about, well, I got to go cover this thing. And I was like, oh, you know, I hate covering these things. It's just a publicity stunt. And then there was this sort of moment of silence. And then one of the student reporters said, yeah, but what if he falls? And to a person, we leapt up out of our seats and ran out. And we're part of the crowd watching him rappel. And you asked me about going hiking with him. Well, I would never be as adventurous as Dan Evans, you know, rappelling off of anything. But it was, you know, it was kind of fun to see him do this thing as young athletic governor. And I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to keep up with him on the hike. I mean, at 93 at the time, I was still behind him, you know. But it was fun. You know, we hiked along one of the trails there outside of Leavenworth.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. And there was a whole bunch of these moderate Republicans following him up the trail. It seemed like the chance of a lifetime. I've always admired Evans.
And to clarify, he did not fall from the clock tower.
He did not fall from the clock tower. We didn't have a, we had a, we got a good couple of pictures of him. It was really a photo story, but I'm sure it impressed a lot of people.
I mean, he's been so present in Washington over the decades. Even after he left his position as governor, he's just been around and quite a staple. How would you sum up his legacy? What has been his impact here?
I think he's somebody that just represents a politics of, generally speaking, of kind of integrity. He took positions that maybe, you know, most Republicans would oppose today. But he wasn't somebody who was in there to tear things down. He was a builder. He was an engineer. He was somebody who could look at things and sort of say, how can this work better? Or how can we have a more productive discussion around civil rights or energy policy and that kind of thing? When he became president of Evergreen, he was criticized because people said, well, you were governor when they created Evergreen, and now you're leaving your one job into another. You know, you've created yourself a sinecure here. And on the other hand, I think there were people in both parties that wanted to shut Evergreen down. It was an experimental, you know, hippie college. And when Evans took over, it just gave the school this level of respectability. nobody thought Dan Evans was, you know, a wild hippie. you know, he wasn't a Governor Moonbeam type. And I think that's something that he's brought to most things that he's done, which is to kind of bring an aura of common sense and respectability to an arena that is usually the opposite.
Thanks for listening to Northwest Reports. This episode was reported by Venice Buhayan with help from Knute Berger. It was produced by me, Maliha Sayed, and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. The story editor was Ryan Femuliner. Our executive producer is Sarah Menzies. You can subscribe to Northwest Reports wherever you listen. And whatever platform you're listening on, please review us. We'd love to know what you think of the show. Also, if you would like to support the work we do at Cascade PBS, whether it's our lineup of podcasts, the video docuseries we stream every week, or the in-depth reporting we deliver every day, go to crosscut.com/membership. In addition to supporting our journalism, members receive complete access to the on-demand programming of Cascade PBS. For the latest political, environmental, and culture news from the Pacific Northwest, visit crosscut.com. That's also where you'll find a text version of the story we discussed today. Northwest Reports is a product of Cascade PBS. I'm Maliha Sayed. We'll be back soon with another episode.